Good evening. I'm your host, Aaron Ripmaster. Welcome to the Man Cave, where joining me tonight to record Diz Dad's podcast number 143 are Brad Coates.
Hi, everybody.
Kevin Crossman.
Hello, and greetings from California.
And David Matt.
Howdy, folks.
Now, tonight on the Diz Dad's podcast, we are completing our land-by-land exploration of Disney's California Adventure. Tonight, we'll be talking about Paradise Pier and nighttime entertainment overall in the park. But before we get to that, I do want to thank our podcast sponsor, Fairytale Journeys, an authorized Disney travel planner. The next time you're planning a Walt Disney World, Disneyland, Disney Cruise Line, heck, even one of those other vacation destinations in Orlando or Southern California, consider working with the Fairytale Journeys travel agent. They'd love to help make your trip as easy and relaxing as possible. You can check out the agency at fairytalejourneys.com, and a Fairytale Journeys agent will get back to you and help you plan the perfect vacation. All right, guys, we're finishing up here with sort of the back of the park. It's probably the largest area and in some ways the most densely populated with, you know, attractions and things, you know, maybe in the whole park. So why don't we start as we have been with these land-by-land explorations and just start with sort of setting the scene. So, Kevin, why don't you take a shot at, you know, walking us into the Paradise Pier area of Disney's California Adventure?
Sure. So Paradise Pier is intended to celebrate the old historical amusement parks out by the, you know, seaside amusement parks. And what it does is present that now with kind of a Disney overlay over this. So, you know, we've talked a lot in these past episodes about all the changes that have taken place at this park. But this area has actually seen the least amount of change, except that they, in recent years, added some, you know, Disney overlay. So it's Mickey's Fun Wheel now instead of just the Sun Wheel. Right. And so it really, it's a land that is completely basically surrounding this body of water, the Paradise Pier Lagoon, and we'll talk about what's going on in the water later, I'm sure. But basically, you can just go in a sort of circle. Either way is fine. You're going to get to the other side, no problem. And I agree with what you were saying. This is sort of like DCA's fantasy land in that you can go here and get a lot of rides done in a quick amount of time, and appropriate for different levels of age of your family as well.
Right, right. And I don't know, David or Brad, is there anything you wanted to add sort of in the big picture of Paradise Pier as you walk into it from really sort of either Grizzly Peak or Pacific Wharf? Either one would kind of feed you into Paradise Pier.
I've always been struck by just what a sort of idealized sort of turn-of-the-century boardwalk it is. I mean, everything is very, very painted white wood. It looks, you know, essentially if you stepped onto a brand-new amusement park from the 1920s or so, and they had just finished painting everything, and if they had essentially decorated it all, at nighttime all in neon. And it's a really striking image, especially with how the California Screamin' roller coaster essentially wraps around almost the entire side of California Adventures there, with the big Ferris wheel out in front.
Yeah, I mean, California Screamin' is definitely the backdrop to the whole Paradise Pier, and is very much the icon of that area of the park. Although you do have the fun wheel as well, which kind of stands out as an icon in its own right.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to kind of to envision it for people that haven't seen it. This is the two things I would point out. That this is the area where they'll have some carnival style games, much like on a boardwalk, and they also a lot of talk over the years is about how the off the shelf rides that they put in at DCA. Well, this is the highest concentration of off the shelf rides that you'll find in DCI. There's quite a few. There's several of them that are, you know, that are just pretty much the go around in a circle on a chain, on a device up in the air, you know, riding the old seats where you are on, you know, going in like Silly Symphony swings and stuff. So But all of that plays into the fact that it's making it like an old style carnival.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and take this then to that next step, which is, you know, what are your favorite things about this area of the park? And I want to talk specifically about attractions first, because this area really does have a lot of attractions to explore. You know, when we talked earlier, a lot of the smaller lands in DCA really only had maybe two or three attractions, but there's a lot to choose from in Paradise Pier. So we'll kind of work our way around. And why don't we start here with Brad? And Brad, give us your favorite attraction in Paradise Pier.
Yay! That means I'll get the one that's everybody's favorite attraction. Maybe not.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Some of them may go for Toy Story. I'm California Screamin' all the way. I love California Screamin'. It's a wonderful ride. For those of the Walt Disney World group that haven't made it to Disneyland yet, you'll hear some people talk about it's just basically Rock and Roller Coaster outside, but that's not an accurate statement. It's longer than Rock and Roller Coaster, and it is a whole different experience because it is outside. It does have that 0-60 launch like Rock and Roller Coaster, but that's definitely my favorite ride. And it also, it's got Fast Pass and it has single rider line, and so it's one that you can really hit and enjoy as many times as you want on a normal day.
Okay. Yeah, you know, California Screamin' is sort of the signature ride. I hear it often on making the tops of people's lists of favorite Disney roller coasters really overall. And it is more on the intense side. It's got a 48-inch height limit, so, you know, it's not for the little ones. But definitely sort of the peak of the thrill ride category.
Yeah, definitely. And you said it right. It is like Rock and Roller Coaster. If people have been on that and they have gives them a sense of it, but it is longer. It's got some bigger drops. It's got the loop. There's some people who've ridden Rock and Roller Coaster and don't even realize that they go upside down. You know, you tell them and they're going, no, I never went. Yeah, you did. If you rode it, you did. It didn't all of a sudden straighten out for you. You know, but it's definitely something you can't avoid when you're out in the open. In fact, my daughter, one of her favorite rides is Rock and Roller Coaster. I still can't get her on California Screamin'. She just won't ride it. She sees it out in the where she can see it, and she doesn't want to get on that. So.
Sure. All right. So, David, what's one of your favorites?
I'm in just a little bit on California Screamin'. When I went to DCA, my sort of daredevil daughter decided that she loved this ride, and we went on it probably five or six times in a row one day. And it's a very smooth roller coaster. If you've got a kid who's kind of, say, interested in kind of moving up from the more easy roller coasters, like, you know, for example, the Goofy Sky School that's in the area, or you know, Goofy's Barnstormer in Magic Kingdom, and you know, they've then moved on to Space Mountain and some of the slightly rougher rides. Well, this is kind of your final destination in the Disney coaster hierarchy, probably tied with Rock and Roller Coaster. It's a really smooth ride. It's a lot of fun, and the line's not too bad. So if your kid insists on going on it over and over again, luckily it's not as much of a hardship as you have in other parks.
Okay. Is there another attraction that you'd like to add to the list of favorites?
Yeah, I'll toss in that the Toy Story Mania is a great ride. It's pretty much identical to the one you'd find on the East Coast. But, you know, if folks haven't been to Disney before, well, you basically get to go through a 3D video game where you're shooting at stuff while you're moving around in a sort of bumper cart.
Okay. And Kevin, what's one of your favorites of the Paradise Pier area?
All right, so since the main e-tickets have been taken, I'm going to sort of lump a couple attractions here and kind of explain why this is one of my favorite parts of any Disney park. And so I'll lump Mickey's Fun Wheel, which is basically a gigantic Ferris wheel, along with the Golden Zephyr, which is, as was mentioned earlier, it's you're in these, like, cars and you spin around. And then there's the Silly Symphony swings, which is another one where you're sitting in little chairs and you spin around. And it's true, none of these are cutting-edge technology. It's true, all of these have sort of two of them anyway, have a Disney theme now, and I think that enhances things. But really the idea for me and why I like these attractions is that you're getting to have a view of the park. You're swinging out over the bay. You're getting, in the case of the fun wheel, it's so high you can see into Disneyland and all around Southern California. It's really spectacular and fun and, you know, intense, but maybe not so intense that, some of your kids can't ride them. So I just like the whole ambiance here in Paradise Pier, and those are the three that I would sort of put together as, you know, certainly not your e-tickets, but definitely don't miss out. And just because it looks like you're going around in a circle, it's still lots of fun.
Okay, so since you brought them up, I'm going to pin you down and you know, put you in the hot seat here, addressing what I hear often as the things
wheel
that
of
complain.
Death.
Right. So the first issue is Mickey's Fun Wheel.
There are very few rides at any amusement park that have frightened me. But yeah, I was on Mickey's Fun Wheel on a windy day on one of the rocking compartments, and yeah, that was scary.
All right, so Kevin, defend the wheel of death.
Yes, please do.
Well, so Mickey's Fun Wheel, there's basically, when you board, there's three cars that you can enter, two of which are swinging cars, one of which is a stationary car. So if you don't like the swinging, you can always get in the line for the stationary cars, and typically the line is actually shorter for those, so that's a nice tip. Honestly, the last few times that my son has dragged me into the swinging cars, it has not been so crazy that we felt like we were going to die. Maybe the wind was low that day. It's certainly more thrilling for sure, but I would not put it as kind of scary death like some of these crazy coasters you get at a Six Flags or some place like that.
Okay, fair enough.
That's just me.
And then the one complaint I hear about Golden Zephyr most frequently in particular is, and I think the swings to some extent as well, is that both of those attractions have an unfortunate tendency to close for big chunks of the day due to wind issues.
Yes, if there's high winds, those attractions may close,
right,
for sure.
And they also close, at least Zephyr does, closes down near World of Color, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, basically everything except Toy Story closes for World of Color.
Okay. So it's a legitimate criticism. Just pay attention. If it's a windy day, you know, you'll have to adjust your plans.
And can I just say, Kevin, I joked about that. I'm sorry if I interrupted, stole your thunder there, Aaron, on the Wheel of Death. But that is the joke. That's the standing joke of people that go to Disneyland. But I will stand with Kevin and defend it. You know, it isn't your grandmother's Ferris wheel, because even in the static ones, it's a very big Ferris wheel. I mean, until you get in it and you get clear to the top, even in the static ones, it's a large Ferris wheel compared to what most people are used to. And so sometimes people get a little bit weirded out, but it's not that bad. But I'm with David too. If you get in the rocking ones, and it's windy and it's acting and it, you can, oh my goodness, you're going to get sick. it can work you over.
Yeah. It's probably a great ride as long as it's not too windy.
Yeah. There's no wind. It's fine.
Now, there is one attraction in the Paradise Pier area that is fairly new. I mean, it wasn't part of the most recent sort of overhaul of California Adventure, but really sort of was at the beginning of all of those changes, and that is that Ariel's Undersea Adventure, the Little Mermaid dark ride, went in here at Paradise Pier before it went in over in the Magic Kingdom.
Yeah, it's really a big upgrade for this park because it replaced a theater show that was really lowly attended.
And it told the story. Was there a show in there?
Yeah, it was a film that told the story of California. And yeah, it just was not that popular. And, this is probably not on anyone's top list of their favorite dark rides. But the quality, I think, is pretty good. It's just We actually had a really good experience the last time we were at DCA because for some reason they were running the cars maybe a little extra slow through the ride. And it actually was a lot better if it went a little slower because then you could see more and it didn't feel like you were in and out so quickly. So maybe Disney's trying to make you feel better by giving you a longer ride. But it's still a good attraction, and there's hardly ever a wait here because it's has such high capacity. So it's definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons I wanted to point it out is that it's another attraction. This area can sometimes seem like it skews a little older because you've got more attractions that have height limits, you know, 40-inch, 42-inch, 48-inch height limits. And so this is another attraction that is great with the younger kids.
Yeah, it is. And that's something, since, you know, we often talk about how this podcast is really a lot for Disney World folks that are considering Disneyland, something to keep in mind with Ariel's and with Toy Story, the one big difference between them and Walt Disney World, the actual internal ride is basically the same. But the queues, Disneyland just does not do the interactive queues. It's just not a thing that they do at this point. And so both of their queues are very blah, very, very sterile. But the rides themselves are great.
Yeah, I think that's one of those blessing of space issues.
Yes, that's exactly it.
You might also say that the queues are more thematically in line with the Paradise Pier theme.
Yeah, that's a good
point.
Which
would be a way of spinning the plainness, but yes.
There you go. Yeah, because it really does. Yeah, you think about Toy Story, you're just kind of walking through these metal, walkways, and it kind of looks like an old boardwalk. That's a good point.
All right, well, let's talk for just a minute here about dining options, because there are some interesting food options in the Paradise Pier area. Why don't we start with the one that is probably the, you know, biggest or gets the most attention, and that's Ariel's Grotto, which is the sort of princess character meal in California Adventure, and really the only princess character meal in a theme park in the Disneyland Resort.
Well, Ariel's Grotto is actually, to be honest with you, we were impressed with the food. It was good. Trying to remember correctly, I believe it's the lunchtime. It is a character meet and greet with all the princesses. So there's several of the princesses. They'll come around to your table. What you basically will order is you'll order, and they'll bring you a tray it'll have an appetizer, but it'll have like six or seven items on it, and they'll just put it right in the middle, and then you just kind of snack at things.
So it's sort of the family-style service.
Yes, very good, yes. More of a family-style service, and that's the princess meal. Then later in the evening, they have dinner. It has a beautiful view of the grotto there where World of Color is at. It has glass on all one side, so you almost feel like you've gone almost inside of a lighthouse or something. It's round and it's very much sea looking, but on the one side it's just all glass, and so it has beautiful views. And then at night, it's right next to the World of Color. They also do a pre-fee meal there for reserved seating for World of Color. That's one of the restaurants that provides that as well. And the food is very good. They do not do the princesses in the evening, though. That's only at the afternoon meal. It's a fantastic character dining experience. They don't spend a lot of time at your table, but you will get each – they're very good about making sure – there's about four of them, as I remember, and they will come around and take pictures with your kids and spend time with your table, short amount of time. And the food is very good. It was not bad at all. In fact, it's probably – other than I really love Carthay Circle, it's a little spendy, but I like it. But other than that, I think it's got the best food in DCA.
Yeah, it was interesting. I had this discussion with a friend recently, and the sort of way that we came to a meeting of the minds on this was that Ariel's Grotto seems to be more of what we're used to as the Disney World style of character dining, where the characters you know, stop at each table, and they seem to be on a bit of a clock. You know, they spend a certain amount of time with each table and move on. And it has the benefit of making sure that every character gets to every table. A lot of the Disneyland character dining experiences, they seem to be a little bit more laid back, a little more relaxed, tend to linger a little more. But you don't necessarily meet everybody. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. That is a very good assessment. You say that it's like Crystal Palace at Disney World. Here they come, you know, and they'll stop for a while and you take a picture and then they're gone, but everybody gets to you. So, yeah.
And there are some other, food options in the Paradise Pier area, which is nice because it's a little isolated there in the back of the park. And if it didn't have its own dining areas, it might get a little annoying. But you've got a number of sort of stand type areas is what it seems to be to me. Kevin or David, do you check out any of those options and have anything you'd like to say about any of them?
Yeah, I can speak to at least the Paradise Garden area. There's two restaurants here. There's the Paradise Garden Grill, and there's also the Boardwalk Pizza and Pasta. They're right next to each other, but they're in this whole garden setting. There's a little stage where they sometimes have musicians playing, and Bayside Brew's beer stand is right near there too. So you have sort of some things that are all right together. And this is right under the shadow of Goofy Sky School, so it's a good place to hang out for waiting for your FastPass ticket to come. But I love the pizza here at Paradise in this area because it's a flatbread. It's just so tasty, and you can get a Peroni inside the restaurant, or you can be smarter and go across the street to Bayside Brewers and get a real good craft beer instead. but we love this. It works for everyone in our family because we have pasta people and pizza people, and then my wife likes to have the grill stuff. And it's really relaxing, and there's hardly ever any lines. So it's definitely worth checking out.
All right. Sounds good. David, anything you would want to add?
I'll chime in that the kind of meat on the stick at the Garden Grill looked really good. I didn't get a chance to eat there.
Skewers.
Folks chomping on it looked very satisfying.
Okay. So those are all good options, and that kind of starts to lead me back around to what we were going to be getting to anyway next, which is evening entertainment. And when it comes to evening entertainment, we talked briefly about the Mad Tea Party that takes place towards the front of the park, quite a while ago when we started this part of our Disneyland series, just to kind of, catch people up. I don't know, Brad, why don't you, if you remember,
for World Color? Or
No. Somebody do a quick synopsis of Mad Tea Party.
I wasn't on that one.
All right.
So.
Kevin, why don't you give us kind of a synopsis of Mad Tea Party, what it is and when it takes place?
So Mad Tea Party takes place in the Hollywoodland area, and it's in that back area, sort of backstage area between Muppets and Monsters, Inc., and the restrooms over there. And they wheel out these carts, and they wheel out some stages, and they have bright, shiny lights, and they have this band that is – they're dressed up as characters from the Tim Burton Alice in Wonderland movie, and lots of very sort of Wonderland-y theming. And, of course, there's lots of flashy, expensive drinks to buy. There's all kinds of weird performers, guys on stilts. There was a guy, and he had these weird tubes, and he was performing.
It
was
just human slinky.
Yeah, it was crazy. And so if you like thumping music and expensive drinks and maybe yes. A younger demographic, this might be the place for you typically on weekends or during busy season.
Right, and this is a weekend evening thing. The time does vary a bit, so you'll want to check a times guide and see when the party gets started, so to speak. All right, so that's at one end of the park. And at the opposite end of the park is really the sort of renovated California Adventures signature attraction in a lot of ways. If it's not Cars Land, it's World of Color in the Paradise Pier Lagoon. And so, I don't know. Brad, you want to take a stab at explaining what World of Color is?
It is one of the most amazing shows and experiences that you're going to see in a Disney park, in my opinion. It is just really something phenomenal. It is a water-based show with water, all types of water jets and water effects, water screens. It will do all types of videos and incredible colors, just neon and bright and brilliant. If you've ever seen water fountains that will, where they put shoot the light into the water and it looks so amazing, it goes up so high. Well, think of that and just on steroids. It's just massive. And the beautiful part of it is it's all the different parts of Disney and movies and different experiences. And on fairly regular occasion, one of the real advantages of this show is they can update it on the fly. And so, like for right now, they just opened up and have put in a Frozen section for the new movie coming out, and the whole show has been redone called Winter Dreams, and they can change out the show and make it fresh and new. It's also the first place where any of the Disney parks began using these new that have just made it to Disney World, the Glow with the Show ears. You know, these Mickey ears that you wear, and they'll light up with the different lights. But it's a lot. It's beautiful music. It's elegant. It's exciting. And if you get in the front row, it's wet.
Okay. And we should say that, you know, the blessing and the curse to some extent of World of Color is that it has been a fantastic show and very well received. And what that means is that it's really popular. And getting a prime seat has become a real challenge. So, David, why don't you give us one of your tips for getting a good place to watch World of Color? What's one of the options?
Sure. Probably the cheapest option is go the Fast Pass route. The nice thing about the Fast Pass, which is available kind of by the Grizzly River Rampage ride or such, or the also the entrance from the California Hotel or Grand California Hotel, is that it's decoupled. So you can get that Fast Pass basically first thing in the morning, and it won't interfere with the other Fast Passes you want to get at, say, Soaring or the Radiator Springs Racers. So that does offer you some, you know, a really good general seating area, and you don't have to buy the meal, which is probably the other option someone will talk about.
Okay. So that's one option, is to pull that Fast Pass. It's not anywhere near the Paradise Pier area, so that's the thing to keep in mind. It's all the way back at sort of the beginning of the Grizzly Peak area, in front of, as David mentioned, the Grizzly River Run. Grab your Fast Pass there, tuck it away, and that entitles you to a reserved seating area, or really reserved standing area for World of Color. So another thing to note, this is not there's no theater, so to speak. So it's not like there's a chair that you're
when we say seating, that's a wrong choice, but it's what we have to say. It's standing.
Yeah, reserved standing area. Seating. All right, but there are other options for getting prime seating. And all right, so why don't you give us the another option for getting prime seating or prime viewing for World of Color?
Now, for premium seating, what they've done, there's the section called preferred seating, and that is provided currently for those who will buy a dinner package at what is the Italian one? It's the Trattoria?
Yes.
Wine Country Trattoria, yeah.
Well, that was it. Wine Country Trattoria, Carthay Circle, or now they've added back in Ariel's Grotto. Sometimes during the summer, they will also offer similar to what they tried this last summer at Disney Hollywood Studios. You can do a lunch where it's just like a packaged lunch. It's a lot less expensive. It used to be that when you did preferred seating, if you bought from one restaurant, you got only the yellow section. And then the other one, you got preferred section. Now, from what I understand, all three of them offer the green preferred section. All three of them offer a pre-fee meal, which means a fixed meal. There are three courses or whatever it is for that restaurant. And very similar to the – if you've experienced Fantasmic dining packages and everything at Disney World, it's along that same line. You are going to pay more money, but you're paying for the privilege of having a preferred pass. But the key to these preferred passes is this. All that preferred ticket means is that you have an opportunity to get a good seat in the centrally located section of the viewing area. So it's going to be – for the most part, better viewing than some of the others, than the other sections. That isn't always true, but for the most part, they're going to be better. The trick is this. It does not mean you're going to get a premium viewing spot. It means you have access to that section. And if you get there late, if you come in at the last minute and say, well, I'm in the green section, they'll say, well, go ahead and jump right into that massive body of flesh and see if you can see it. If you get stuck behind people, it doesn't matter if you're in the center, you're left or right, you're not going to see much. And so you really do want to make sure you get there early. But what it does is it provides you really centrally located. And there's a just a quick nut is this. And also with Carthay Circle, which is funny, it's the most expensive one. And yet they'll try to make you stay on the top row. They actually are told to send you to the side. If somebody tells you and you go to the green section and one of the cast members says, well, you need to go over there, everybody understand this. You don't have to go over there if you don't want. And they're not going to force you. Just say, I want to go down front. And they'll let you go right by them and go down front. Then there's two rows with a rail. And if you can get up on that rail, it fits about five families. If you can get up on that rail, you are about to have the most exhilarating experience because, I mean, you are dead center, and it's like it's right in your face. It's just an incredible experience. And but I've learned the hard way. If you get there a little bit late, you paid a lot of money for a meal to get a cruddy – I won't say the other word – a cruddy view. You might as well just save the money and had a corn dog. And, you know, gotten in anywhere else. Because there's views in the yellow section and the blue section that are far superior to bad green section.
Right. Yeah, like anything else. If you end up in the back part of what is otherwise a good section, it's not going to be as good a view as being in the front of what would otherwise be a less desirable section.
Yep, that's exactly it. But to get in that green section, the only way to get in a dining package.
Brad, when you're up front like that, do you get wet?
Only if it's real windy.
Okay.
But here's the truth. You know the wet section that's right in front of that?
Yeah.
Which is also a very good view. That's another tip for anybody. If you get a green ticket, you can go to that rail. But then there's a section right in front of you, and they call that the wet zone. And it will get wet, especially if it's windy. But if you have a green ticket and all the rail is taken up on the green rail, If there's room still in the wet section and you want to go to it, you can duck right under that rail. Technically for them, they don't – if you have a green one, they'll let you go green, yellow, blue. They'll let you go wherever you can spot a place that you really like. And they're real good about it. I mean they don't make waves at all. But yeah. But if it's windy, oh, yeah, because you're only talking, what, 10 – 8 or 10 feet from the very front row, which is wet – to the next rail, which is preferred green. Well, it don't take a lot of wind to push water 10 feet when
sure.
it's you
okay.
know 100 feet in the air. So, yeah. But we didn't get wet there, but it wasn't a windy night.
All right.
Yeah, we got pretty wet, and it wasn't all that windy, but apparently was windy enough. So,
but you were on that green rail?
Yeah, we were in the green section, and actually we were pretty far. But I gotta say, our lesson learned from that was next time I think we'd actually go. I'll call it across the street to the more regular, you know, plebeian seating, just to kind of let the kids stay warm longer. But it depends a lot on just how hot it is out.
Yeah, that's true too. Also, the fire hydrant. You know about the fire hydrant in the blue section? If anybody wants to know about any of those other tricks, there's two or three more, and they're in that World of Color super thread. But the fire hydrant in the blue section is another great spot. It's kind of like you guys heard about the light tower one over at Fantasmic from Disneyland. Have you heard about that trick?
No.
Oh. Well, I'm getting off on a different park, but there's a light tower. All the light towers go to the ground. You stand behind them, and you can't see the lagoon. But in a minute, those light towers are going to elevate up into the air. And as soon as they do, you've got the perfect view. And you got there last, and you have one of the best views of Fantasmic in Disneyland. So,
cool.
There isn't a bad view of World of Color. There's only an obstructed view. That's my opinion. You're going to see so much of it. Even if you're way off to the side, off axis, the way they've constructed it is just really sharp. And you're going to get an exhilarated show, even if you didn't get one of the premium right up center views.
Let's go ahead and go around just, you know, one more time and kind of sum up and have each of you just share one sort of favorite thing, tip, or trick about anything Paradise Pier related. It could be an attraction tip. It could be something about World of Color. It could be any of those things. Why don't we start with David. Tip, trick, favorite thing, whatever, of Paradise Pier that we maybe didn't talk about.
Well, I got to say the view of Paradise Pier at night from, say, the Disneyland Hotel is just really spectacular when it's all lit up. I wasn't able to really see, say, World of Color when it was going on, but just the general effect of the roller coaster lighting and the Ferris wheel and stuff is really something to marvel at. And even if you're perhaps not staying at the hotel, just kind of find some spot around the park where you can, just observe the whole area at night because it's really pretty.
Yeah, and that lighting makes for great pictures, too. All right, and Brad, any other sort of last tips or tricks about Paradise Pier?
Well, I would just quickly, I'll mention the Disneyland Hotel is kind of off, and so the view is a little bit tricky. You can see it if you really want to see a beautiful view of that Paradise. That's one of the few times we're actually staying at the Paradise Pier Hotel, which is kind of the redheaded stepchild of Disney hotels there. Everybody talks about it. It's not as nice. It's not as themed. But it has incredible views of the Paradise Pier. If you get up in the higher rooms and it's pointed, you get one of the theme park views. They've got incredible views. But I think my hint to people is not a lot of people are aware that there's also shows in the World of Color area that happen during the day. And what it is I remember it's a Goofy comes out and they play this music and he comes out in character and it's like he's playing around with the water jets and he's getting them to do crazy things. And it's actually a lot of fun. I don't think they, as far as I know, they don't have a scheduled time that they do it. It's just that every once in a while, if you're in that area, you'll hear the music start to play. And if you do, that show is actually a lot of fun.
It is actually worth watching. It is actually on the schedule, and I agree with that. That was going to be you stole my tip, so I'm going to have to think of another one. But it's great because it's there. There's never a giant crowd, and it's 10 minutes, and it's hilarious. They get the Goofies is just funny. You can, you know, he'll post for sort of pictures up there, and it is really, really a lot of fun.
Yeah, it really is. Well, then you give him the best entrance into Cars Land. There you go.
Yeah, I'll chime in. The Goofy show is really cool to watch.
Yeah, it is. It's fun, isn't it? In some ways, it was almost like more fun than World of Color because it was less stress.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that is true.
All right.
Oh, well, they also do like a Phineas and Ferb thing that I just happen to be like wandering past about, I'd say, 3 o'clock in the afternoon where they just did a Phineas and Ferb dance party. They did the Squirrel in the Pants song, which is always good for a laugh.
Yeah, I think they were doing that for the summer, but I don't know if they're doing it anymore, are they?
I think they are. It's pretty popular.
But I heard it was very popular. I didn't get to see it, but I heard it was good.
Can't go wrong with Squirrels in the Pants.
Okay, Kevin, come on. Sorry, I stole one.
We'll stick with Goofy, and I'll just we've talked around it, but I want to make a mention here of Goofy Sky School. It's a Wild Mouse coaster, and it's not any great technology or whatever. But this is actually a pretty good example of where the Disney magic really does come into play, because this was an attraction that was pretty underutilized in terms of the wait times or whatever when it was Mulholland Madness. And they put a Goofy theme on it, and the signs supposedly Goofy's teaching you how to fly, and some of the signs and different things that they have in there, plus Goofy's narration in the car, much, much funnier and more enjoyable than before. So if you've got littler ones who don't want to do California Screamin', they might be interested in this one. This is actually, I'll be honest with you, Wild Mouse coasters have not always been my thing. I've always felt like I was going to fall out of them. And it was like the Wheel of Death we mentioned earlier. But I've gotten better now that my son has dragged me on that a few times. So that is a fun ride. But definitely try to fast pass this because the line can move slow.
Okay. Great tip. All right. Well, you know, you've heard the things that we think are important and that we like about Disney California Adventure. We'd love to hear from you. You can email us at podcast@disdads.com, visit our blog, disdads.com, tweet us at disdadspodcast on Twitter, and participate in the discussions in our forums at boards.disdads.com. Until next time, I've been Aaron Rittmaster with Brad Coates.
Thanks for stopping by, everybody.
David Matt.
Night, John Boy.
And Kevin Grossman.
Aloha, everyone.